Now we'll start Pasuk Beis and Gimel. So what happened was this. In Pasuk Aleph, we said that these are the days of Ahasuerus, and he ruled over 127 counties. Starts Pasuk Beis. And the contradiction. By Yom Mahim, in those days, Kisheves HaMelech Ahasuerus, when Ahasuerus, we'll assume Kisheves means when he sat on his throne, Al-Kisem Al-Husay, where was the Kisem Al-Husay? Ashibashushan Abira. Kisheves means when he sat down, HaMelech, the king, Ahasuerus, Al-Kisem Al-Husay, on his throne. Bishnas, in the third year of his reign, Asim Mishtal Chalsarov. So it says when he sat on his throne in the third year. So the Gemara in Megillah, Yeral from Beis, asked the question. That's a contradiction of words. The Gemara returns to explain Megillah, because it took a break here, we're not going into. 11b. By Yom Mehem Keshavas HaMelech. In those days, when the king sat, the Gemara understands the Megillah to mean when he first sat, when he sat, as he sat. The prefix Chav can mean when and as. As he sat at the beginning of his reign, Fiksib Basrei, right? Immediately afterward, it says it was the third year of his reign. It was the third year of his reign. How do you go from the first year to the third year? That's Gemara's question. What are we talking about? Pasuk Beis, Pasuk Gimel, right away or not? Gemara answers, Amar Rava, we always talk about the names, not tonight. Mai Keshevis, what is the meaning when he sat down? Le'acha shenesiyayishvu daitoi. After his mind was put at ease. So, Oscar says, that doesn't mean as he sat physically, but as he came to rest mentally. In the third year of his reign, regarding his fate of his Jewish subjects, he celebrated with a great feast. He celebrated a great feast? Art scroll. The prophet Yirmiyahu had foretold that the Jews would be redeemed from the Babylonian exile after 70 years. So they knew there was going to be a 70-year reign. The problem was, they didn't know when the 70 years began, and therefore when it would end. However, Yirmiyahu did not clarify how these 70 years were going to be calculated. Each of the Gentile kings who ruled the Jews in exile were aware of Yirmiyahu's prophecy and with great anxiety awaited the deadline, each according to his own calculation. Thus, the passing of those 70 years with the Jews still in Gullus was a cause for celebration. So, simply, we're not going to go through this chart. Article has a chart here. We're not going through it this week. Lucky us. It is like this. What does it mean when he sat on the throne? It doesn't mean when he sat on the throne physically. That's not the third year. You would sit on the throne the first second. When he sat on the throne the third year actually means when he was comfortable sitting on the throne. What was he afraid about again? He was afraid that the second base of Migdash would come to the exile would come to an end, and the beginning of the second base of Migdash would begin, and then he would lose his Malchus. He couldn't rule over the whole world if Israel has a base of Migdash and a Malchus as well. So, we're taking that as a little bit of a reason to talk about current events topic. Not literally current events. What you call current events, what I call current events. Time of the year in Judaism. So we just came to the close of Hanukkah. The Hanukkah story just ended. So we'll discuss the end of the Hanukkah story. The end of the Hanukkah story is not when you stop lighting menorah. What happened was like this. There was a war going around in the middle of the second base of Middash. And the Hashmonaim took over. And they started a fight. And then they won the fight. And that we discussed a couple times, how they knew they won and stuff like that. So now the Hashmonaim took over. And what did they do? They didn't just start over the base of Migdash with the Mizbeach and the Menorah, but the Rambam's Lashon, very interesting Lashon, the Rambam says they began to rule authoritatively as kings of Klal Yisrael. The Rambam says he calls Malchus Hashmonaim. The Hashmonaim referred to as Malachim with a king Malachim. Not only did they become the Kahanim Gedolim, but they became Malachim, means kings as well. And the Ramban, very famous Ramban. Ramban and Parshas Vayechi, it would have been great if it was this week, but it's next week. Parshas Vayechi says, the Pasuk says, Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda. That means, what Yaakov told him was, that at no point in time, once the Melucha becomes part of the David dynasty, then that's it. Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda, you can't take it away. And the Ramban goes into a long drasha there, and the Ramban says, you want to know what happened to the Hashmonaim? There's a Gemara that says that there are no Hashmonaim alive today. They were wiped out. The reward for saving Klal Yisrael, because that's what, if you read what they did, they saved Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael was about to become assimilated completely. They stood up, they saved the world, and they got punished. No one exists today from the Hashmonaim. No one. They're all wiped out. What? Why? So Ramban says they violated that pasuk. Because when they took over, they were allowed to be Kahanim Gedolim, because they came from the Shevet of Levi. But they were not allowed to be kings, because kings is limited to the pasuk by Yaakov, Le'yosef Shevet Yehuda. If you have the blue article, maybe they have the article on the bottom, on Vayechi. So what happened, the famous Ramban gives that long thing, saying that he makes a lot of assumptions in this Ramban. First, he's making the assumption, which is fine, maybe, that they did something wrong. And that's why they were punished. And he figured out the reason why they were punished. And he's also making the assumption, all good assumptions, and he's also making the assumption that they usurped the power, and that was a problem. Let's see if it says it here. No, it's cool. Oh, Yaakov, let's see, I don't remember. I didn't look at this before. The privilege of providing Klai Yisrael, sovereign royalty, the royal scepter, shall not pass from the house of Unklus. That's going to be the, that's Unklus' words. We'll see, not pass from the house of Yehuda. Unklus is saying this. This blessing did not take effect immediately. However, for the first Jewish king, Shaul was a Benjamite. That's a problem right away. Obviously, if it never could be Yehuda, how did Shaul become a king? However, Yaakov's blessing applied uninterrupted. There's one answer. Uninterrupted from the time the monarchy went to David. So which means, according to this, what he's saying, this is that, I don't even know who he's saying this from, it's different people, that really there was, once it starts, it can't stop. He's saying there's no question on Shaul. We could also ask on Shaul. I would ask, how did Shaul become king? He's a Benjamite. So one answer is going to be, no, it doesn't start until David starts. Not going to answer the Hashmonaim yet. Maybe come with a different answer. However, Yaakov's blessing applied only when the monarchy went to David, and it continued even after the demise of the royalty. For after the destruction of the second temple, we did this Gemara, the heads of the Babylonian exile were appointed from the tribe of Yehuda. So since we knew even an exile appointed for our tribe of Yehuda, that means he's saying now, it's not limited, Oswald, he's saying from people, it's not limited to the king only, but the leaders of the generation. Right? As to the present times, before the kings of David, when kings did not come from Yehuda, Gerari explains that Yaakov's blessing only applied when there will be a legally constituted king. The times of Shaul and judges were temporarily aberrations. Similarly, the current exile will be followed by a return of the David dynasty, Meri Meir Amen. So we have like this. We have a pasuk in the Torah saying, which you could have read as a blessing, don't let the scepter move away from David dynasty. As a blessing. And if you did it, okay. So not a commandment, not a prohibition, not a punishment. The Ramban comes along and says, no, this is not only a blessing, this is something very valuable. Enough, by the way, that the punishment of ruining this, according to the Ramban, wiped out death. We have to figure out what that means also. We have time tonight. It's not only a prohibition, it's a prohibition for death. And I'm telling you right now, since we just saw, it might not only apply to kings, even leaders. So it's possible we already have a Rambam. The Rambam says that the Hashmonaim were considered kings. There are others that are going to say, no, the Hashmonaim were not kings. They were leaders, but leaders doesn't mean a king. But some are going to say that doesn't make a difference. When it comes to this prohibition, no leadership role is allowed unless they come from the David dynasty. And they were wiped out. Unbelievable. Now, as a side, because Aronovich asked, so why is it a death penalty? Rav Gifter, hard to understand, but he says it. Rav Gifter says that the reason is because the belief in the monarchy from the David dynasty is so strong, it's a basic in emunah. It's like one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. It's like what Yud Gimel Ikrim. It's an unbelievable idea. One of the Yud Gimel Ikrim has to be that the David dynasty exists. Not that I think Mashiach will come. No, it has to be that you not only believe that it will come, but one of the 13 principles on some level has to be that the David dynasty will always be the only dynasty in Klai Yisrael. And again, we have a quirk, only David dynasty when it started. Because beforehand, it didn't have to start. If you're going to answer that for Shaul. Because again, we're going to have tonight, we're going to answer two things. Shaul might have been a problem. So we have an easy answer. Didn't begin at that time. Or we'll come with a different answer for Shaul. Hopefully answer the Hashmonaim as well. Because the Hashmonaim were either leaders and or the Rambam says they were kings, becomes a problem. So we have an unbelievable idea from Yaakov Kamenetsky. I was going to bring it and I forgot to bring it. Yaakov Kamenetsky, an essay in a few places, has a mind-blowing idea. And he said like this. We know, some of us will deny it, we know there's something called, in Yiddish, the term for information, when you want to, we call it raid. What's the raid? So I once wrote an article and I called it the raid of the lost ark. Maybe a play on words to something that we might not recognize because we're religious Jews. But the raid of the lost ark. So what is the raid of the lost ark? That's a different article I once wrote. We're tonight going to discuss this as well. So we know like this. This is what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky starts. There's an halacha brought down that we're only supposed to count on a Jewish calendar. We do the Moilad, the Jewish calendar, and the Jewish months are important. So Ramban asks, is in Parshas Bo. He asks a serious question. When did we start naming months, these Persian names, Adar, Nisan? Now, of course, they have Ramazan. Look at the Hasidic Sefarim, this tremendous Ramazan, what they are. Kislev. But overall, when you look through the Chumash, the five books of the Torah, none of these names appear. You might get a season like Aviv, but otherwise, how will we refer to the months? By numbers. Mm-hmm. First month, second month, third. When did it begin to change? And you see a little bit as you go further into the Nevi'im, in Esther we're going to have it several times, right? In Esther we're going to have it. At the end of the Babylonian exile, when they went back to Yerushalayim, they took with them the Persian names. That's what the Ramban talks about. But, like, why? Why would they do that? It's potentially another violation of the Torah. It's, the Torah says, you're supposed to count a Jewish calendar with Jewish words. In fact, many people, when you're in yeshiva, they don't write the January out. They'll write a one. They won't write the words. And many of them won't write the year. They won't write 2024. They'll write 25. They'll write 20. They won't write. The reason is because it's potentially a biblical violation to be counting the calendar on a non-Jewish calendar. Potentially, we're not going to that shaila. Maybe in the Esther, we'll get to that shaila eventually. But that's what it says. So Rabbi Yanka Kamenetsky is an amazing idea. He says like this. When the Jews were going back, leaving the exile, that's how it ties into the first pasuk now. They had to know that the, going back to the second base of Middash was not going to be the Messianic revelation. It was not the ultimate redemption. And that had to be clear. It had to be clear to the people. I don't know what Ahasuerus is thinking. Ahasuerus, this is my time, might have been relaxed that the Jews are never getting out. Does that mean he was would have been upset what I'm about to tell you? Or he only would have been upset if the Jews would have taken over being Messianic revelation? Rabbi Yaakov Kanevsky says, the reason why they took back the non-Jewish names with them is because they wanted a zecher for the Golus to say, we're still in Golus. During the second era temple, we were still considered in Golus, and they did things on purpose to remind the Jews that this is not a Messianic revelation. We're going to do certain things to prove it. One, but what we're going to do is, we're going to potentially violate an open Torah law and say we're using non-Jewish months, non-Jewish names. Why? Because we're still in the Golus. Don't think you left Babylonia, you built the second base of Middash, and you're good. No. Part of it is we're still in the Golus remaining. And he has an unbelievable idea. Back to the potential smirk from some of your young history. So what happened with the Lost Ark? You normally assume that the Aron was hidden, and what was it? A great secret cabal, which we've discussed in the Thursday night class, existed. And the secret cabal knew where the Aron was. But okay, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Do you believe before this conversation tonight that anyone knew where the Aron was? Maybe no, maybe a couple people. He says, if you look at the Yerushalmi is a case where a regular story in the Yerushalmi, where someone was walking the Beis Mishnah Kayin, and he saw a line in the floor, and the line doesn't line up, there's something off it. So he decided to pick it up, and he died. And it said, the Kahanim said, oh, yeah, because he was going to uncover where the Aron was. Which means everyone knew where it was. This Kayin might have not known. But most of the people knew where it was. There's a contra Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Not, I don't know most of the people, but many, many, it was the worst kept secret around. So why did they, what is that? What did they leave in the Aron? The Lost Ark. Why? Now it's lost. But why? Then it was lost. Why? We know, the Mishnah says in Yuma, that the second Beis Hamikdash was missing five things that did not exist in the second, exist in the first. And one of them is the Aron. And it becomes Allah HaShalah. There are many practical laws. If the Aron's not there, you lose certain mitzvahs potentially. But they knew where it was. So why did they do it? So he says, because the Rabbanon wanted to make sure, Rabbanon means them, Anshei Knesset Gedolah, wanted to make sure that people should not think we're back to Messianic revelation. Don't ever think for 1 second. Second base of Middash means we're covered. We're not covered. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to remove certain things from the second base of Middash on purpose that everyone should know, hey, this can't be a chashav. We can't have a Messianic revelation if there's no Aron in it. We can't have a state of Israel and say it's Messianic revelation. We have no Aron. Great Israel Lost Ark still exists. So Yaakov adds now another thing. He says, okay, we have a Ramban. The Ramban says that the Achashmonaim did something terrible. They usurped the authority, the sovereignty, and they were killed out for it. So he says, okay, I'm not getting involved with that conversation. What the Achashmonaim were thinking. Achashmonaim could have been thinking, we'll see in a couple of ways tonight. But they might have had excuses. He said, but what about the Rabbanim? They had the geis. The Achashmonaim wanted to be the kings, maybe to say they were bad people. They wanted to be kings. They took the job, and now they got punished. But why didn't the Rabbanim stop it? You don't see anywhere the Rabbanim turned to them and said, listen, Achashmonaim, by the way, we have a pasuk, not a promise, but a command, death penalty on the table. Guys, relax. The first Chashmonaim were Chashmonaim people. He says, you never see anywhere that there was a protest. If there was no protest, how much of a punishment do you expect the Chashmonaim to accept? It's not a Yashutik thing. They're getting punished for something that no one warned them about. So Yaakov says, unbelievably, in Echanami, they knew that the rabbis knew that it was a little bit wrong. But in the big scheme of things, they wanted this wrong. They wanted, because they were saying that they were going to get up and tell the Chashmonaim, guys, what tribe are you again? Yeah, no way. David dynasty.
And the world will hear. The leaders of the war, the victory, the people who saved Klal Yisrael wanted to be kings, but the Hashmonaim said not. But the rabbi said, no, Hashmonaim, you're from Levi. We need Yehuda. We're going to put someone in there from Yehuda. Then everyone's going to start thinking, oh, we're back to the greatness. So they did multiple measures within the system to, in a way, lessen the glory of what they were going through. In order for people to remember that we're still in Gaulis on some level. Keep the Goyish names of the months. Let non-Yehuda people be in charge. We don't care. We don't want you thinking this is the end of the game. This is not the end game. We're going to go through it. And Rabbi Yaakov adds on more. Mamish what we learned in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, what do we learn? A lot of it I'm saying is my opinion, Rabbi Yaakov. Just in case someone looks up and sees, I'm trying to make it easier. In Mitzrayim, what happened? The original Gezerah, coming up in the next couple of weeks, the whole story, was for 400 years. But we all know from Cheder, the Jews weren't there 400 years. They were there 210 years. Why'd they get out early? So one of the answers, the most famous answer was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognized that if they would stay longer, they would be redeemed. They would be worthy of being redeemed. They would have assimilated completely. That there wouldn't have been a Jewish nation to take out. In order to take out the Jews from Egypt, they have to be identified as Jews. If they reach a 50th level of Tumah, easy way to understand it. To the 50th level of Tumah, there's no removing them from it. So Hashem said, oh, I'm stuck. I'm going to get them out early. Rabbi Yaakov seems to say, the same thing happened when they went for the 70 years. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that really the Jews are supposed to be in goals like we are today. But if I'm going to have a consistency, what we spoke about the other week, 12 plus 12 is not 24 in Jewish law. If we don't have numbers add up. If the Jews would have stayed throughout Babylonian exile, then into the next one, there would be no Jews to get out. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to set the system up, that I'm going to set up a second base of Mikdash, not as good as the first one, that's going to build up our immune system to handle the goals we're now, hopefully ending tomorrow. So the system was set up on purpose in order to get them in. So now, how do I bring this now? I'm not sure what Achashverosh is nervous about. We have a Gemara saying that Achashverosh began his Malchus on the third year. Contradiction of words. He can't begin his Malchus on the third year. So the Gemara says, it's not when he began his Malchus, when he began the confidence that the Jews are finished now. Now, I don't know on the side. Did Achashverosh know the shir I just gave and he still didn't want that either? Or Achashverosh was not part, he was part of the, what was saying the mass movement that the rabbis were afraid of. People are going to think when the 70 years ends and we go back to the Beis HaMikdash, it will be a real Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Rabbanim didn't want anyone thinking, and maybe Achashverosh was afraid of that. I mean, the question is, would Achashverosh have minded a weak second temple? What was he afraid of? Any second temple, or he was afraid of a real second temple? That's the question that I don't have an answer for yet. So we have like this. We have Achashverosh starting, Perek Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel. Too much, I mean, I don't want you getting the bends. Moving way too fast on the Pasuk Gimel already. But on Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel, we have a nervousness from Achashverosh. And we're taking that to leapfrog into post-Chanukah. Now we're dealing with post-Chanukah. But to understand on what the fear was. We have Rabbi Yaakov Kanetsky's wild idea that in the second Beit Shemekdash, they purposely, the Rabbanon purposely set the system up that it should not be considered greatness at all. We wanted to have certain ungreatnesses going on. Now, there are other answers for the Chashmonaim. So according to this, the Chashmonaim did something wrong. And the Rabbanon didn't stop it. The Rabban says, we have to know that many, many people, can't say calibers, Abarbanel, other Rishonim probably, Arrived, that seem to disagree with the Rabban. They say, no, whatever reason the Chashmonaim are wiped out today, I don't know. But you can't say that the Chashmonaim did such a basic Avera and understand it, again, not as a promise, understand it as a prohibition, and they publicly violated a prohibition. It's too wild to say. So we have to come up with Terutzim. Again, for sure we have an easy Teretz. But can we come up with a different Teretz for Shaul that potentially can answer the Chashmonaim as well? So I'll tell you another good idea. The Arish Dvash says, an amazing idea, that when it says LeYosef Sheva B'Yehuda, we know in the ultimate dynasty, it has to be someone from the David genetics. That's true. But what about if you're not Ben Achadem? You're Shtam from David, but from the mama. Your maternal lineage comes from Yehuda. Would that be a good enough thing or not? So Yaris Dvash seems to say that when it comes to violating these laws, you're not going to be Mashiach. Mashiach might have to be Ben Achaben. But as far as violating the Yosef Shevim Yehuda, that was not a blessing for only male children. Even a female from the tribe of Yehuda, she has a kid, and the kid takes over as a leader, that's good enough to go. As long as the mother's involved. We had a Gemara a few weeks ago. We already quoted the Gemara not once, I think two different shurim already. The Gemara has a famous story. In Brachas, there was a fight with Rabbi Gamliel, because there was a fight going on, and there was a mass revolution against Rabbi Gamliel. And they sat around. You have the Gemara there? They sat around, and they discussed who should take over now as the Nasi. So we said, one person we're afraid of because of this. One, right? Remember, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, we had different people. And one person says, what about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, brachas one. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has some advantages. Again, they were nervous. We said, we can't, if you remember how the story started, you can't have Rabbi Yeshua take over, because Rabbi Yeshua was the one who fought with him. So if you put the antagonistic person, if that's the word antagonistic, the person who he directly fought with taking over, it's a little unpleasant for Rabbi Gamliel. It's too much of a shtach. If you could use English words, too much of a shtach. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua, could it be that? So he says, one second. Nuk Rabbi Yeshua, should we put in Rabbi Yeshua? This is on Chav Zayin Abayz, Baal Maisa Hayu. He was the one involved with the case. It's not a nice thing to do. Can't do that. What about Rabbi Akiva? So he said, Rabbi Akiva was the problem. We spoke about it. Rabbi Akiva didn't have schus avis. He came from Gerim. He lost out. So he said, no, anyway, we're afraid. He doesn't have the real schusim. He's afraid. We can't put him in there. He'll get... So who do we put up there? Put up Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? So the Gemara says, Chacham. That's good. But the Gemara explains, Chacham means we know people ask him questions. He has good answers. Usher. And it says, what's the Dam Al Banash Gemara says afterward, that if we need someone to deal with the house of Caesar, he'll be able to do it. We're getting rid of Gamaliel. We need someone who could take over the government for us. And the last Miley has what? Vuasiri le'Ezra. He's the 10th generation to Ezra. And what does it say over here? Why? Gemara says, the Isle is chus avos. He has chus avos. The simple interpretation of why we took Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was because he had chus avos, it came from Ezra. But the Irish Trash says, no, no, that's not what it meant. That's what Rashi says it means. Chus avos v'dilma anasher. What does chus avos mean? He understands the Irish Trash. Chus avos means genetically, maternally, he comes from the tribe of Yehuda. You want to put a leader up. You want to put a leader up. You got to have someone from the tribe of Yehuda. So he came from the tribe of Yehuda. He wasn't Yehuda directly, Ben Achaben. No, he wore a different passport. But he had enough of it, a maternal lineage from Yehuda, that it counts. That's the Yashar Shon. And then he says the Chashanoyim had the same thing. The Chashanoyim were Kahanim. They served in the base of Mikdash. They lit the menorah, Kahanim. But maternally, they came from the tribe of Yehuda, and therefore they were permitted, didn't do anything wrong. They were permitted to take over the kingship. As far as the prohibition of don't take away the malchus from Yehuda, they did not take away the malchus from Yehuda. That's good enough for them. Anyone who has any lineage involved with Yehuda can get away with that as well. So the Yarish Tzvah says that that's why it does. Just in case we're wondering. Shaul is beforehand. Right. Shaul would not, I do not think Shaul came from the mother from Yehuda. We're going on to right. We'll get to that's the third answer. So we have two answers now. We have one that did wrong and only Shaul was before. We have one that the Chashmonaim have an excuse with the mother maternal. There'll be a third answer in a few minutes. Now there's an interesting Gemara here. The Gemara in Yuma 52b. We know part of this Gemara. Part of this Gemara. What does the Kohen Gadol do when he's davening inside the Kachem Kachem? So here goes a phrase. My Matzli, we're on 53b in Yuma. What does he daven? Here it goes. Rava Barada, Varovan Baravada, Vitavayu, Mishmei de Rav. Two people say the name of Rav. Yirotzai Milfanecha, Hashem Alekeinu. We know this from Rosh Hashanah. Shetehe Shana Zu, Geshuma Ushchuno. Okay, we know that already from Rosh Hashanah daven. Shchuna Malyus, or whatever. What else do you say? Now we that's what we say in daven. I don't know if you remember this one. Here's the next one that the Kohen Gadol says as he's leaving the house. Loi Ya'adi Ovid Shultan Midbeis Yehuda. The prayer he says is, may one who exercises rulership not pass from the house of Yehuda. 18 on bottom, as they say. This is a reference to the head of the country, Resh Kalusa, in Babylonia, who were descendants of King David and enjoyed autonomy and a semi-royal status. That's what it says. So we were saying that the Kohen Gadol stepping out of the base of Megdash, out of the Kachar Kachem, says, by the way, make sure that the leaders who are the tribe of Judah leaders, that's what we're saying here, the tribe of Judah leaders should remain in charge. Now, what did it say, the phrase? Loi Ya'adi Ovid Shultan Ibeis Yehuda, which we said, Oscar said in English meant, may one who exercises rulership not pass from the house of Yehuda. What type of funny phrase is this? Which phrase is this? If you look closely, on the Pasuk, Lo Yosir, shave it me Yehuda, do not. Again, means the tribe. What does it say? Hold on. In English, Layosa Shevim Yehuda. How do you read this? The scepter shall not part from Yehuda. Umachoykim be'em raglov. The scepter shall not part from Yehuda is Layosa Shevim. Look at the lesson of the Targum. That's what I said before. Layadi
Aved Shultan mit the Beis Yehuda. Which means you're going to ask me, where did you come up with this funny phrase? The funny phrase is Aramaic, Unkelus, from the Pasuk of Yashem Yehuda.
So the Kohen Gadol is walking out of the base of Mikdash. The Kohen Gadol is walking out of the base, out of the Kach HaKachim. And he says, let it be a Shana, Shchuna, Gachuma, whatever. And then he says, by the way, in Hebrew, Lo Yashem Yehuda. Yashem Yehuda. He says in Aramaic. Now, here's a bomb question. The Kohen Gadol is walking out and saying, don't let the scepter leave from the tribe of Yehuda's leadership. Sam Sofer seems to ask this question. When the Chashmonaim were Kahanim Gedolim for about 100 plus years, and they went into the Kach HaKachim legally, when they came out, did they say this prayer? Did they say the prayer, don't let the scepter leave from Yehuda? But on one hand, guys, you usurped that scepter. Right? Doesn't make any sense, right? Imagine right now, let's say I'm standing here, and let's say Beck becomes the rabbi of the shul, right? And now he has to walk outside. He keeps going, and says, listen, don't make Rabbi Abner, he has to be the rabbi. You just grabbed it. What are you talking about? So the Beis Chashmonaim, who were not only Kahana Gedolim, were discussing that they were the kings of Klai Yisrael, are they going to make this phrase walking out of the base and make this, by the way, let the scepter stay by Yehuda. Mocking the system. Could be that's why they said in Aramaic. They don't want to be clear what they were saying. They'd walk out in Hebrew and say, L'Yos Hashem Yehuda. Every Jew standing would say, what? What did you just say? L'Yos Hashem Yehuda? Are you being sarcastic? What does that supposed to mean? So this became a very serious question. Did the Chashmonaim say the prayer that the scepter should remain Yehuda when they usurped it? So one answer could be, yeah. They had, from their maternal lineage, so of course they would say it. Of course they didn't do anything wrong. Maternal lineage allowed. But there's another answer that will answer Shalom Melech as well. Let's say the Jewish king from David dies and he has five sons and each one's a bigger bum than the next. And we look through the cousins and there's no one from the David dynasty lineage that's worthy of being a king. Are you allowed to take someone else in between? When there's no one worthy from David, maybe the pasuk Yosef Shev Yehuda means when you have someone worthy of Yehuda, don't take someone else. But if there's nobody worthy, of course take somebody else. If you want to say yes, that when there's no one for the David dynasty that's worth it, then someone else can step up to the plate, you're answering both problems. Shalom Aleph became king! Yeah, because when Shalom Aleph became king, David wasn't ready yet. There was no one from the house of David, well, David, going back, the house of Judah, there was no one from the house of Yehuda who was worthy for Kach. No one was worthy. So okay, you took the biggest guy, who was the biggest guy? Shalom Aleph. You take the most worthy guy when there's no one else. Now, we hope within the realm someone's close enough from Yehuda, we'll take Yehuda. But he didn't do a problem. We don't have to come on to it only starts when the clock starts. No! Worthy people. When the Chashmonaim took over, in the beginning, there was no one else. Later on, they became bums. But in the beginning, they were the people. They were the most worthy people. They were the most worthy people. So if they were the most worthy people, they didn't do anything wrong at all. If they didn't do anything wrong at all, they're allowed to say this prayer. We're saying, yeah, don't take the scepter from Yehuda when it's negev. No, obviously. I'm not saying now because no one's around. But when they're negev, we're going to say it. Not negev, we're not going to say it. That's what they want to say. I want to add a knetch maybe a little differently. Because that's how I saw people say this. That is, when there was no one else around, then they're allowed to take it. They're allowed to make the statement because they're not doing anything wrong. It's not mocking the David dynasty. They're saying, listen, right now we're there, but let's hope it gets back to where we are. It's almost a prayer for the future, for Mashiach. But now I have a clear, no answer. If they're getting up there and they're saying, as non-Judah Enoklach, by the way, we hope Judah gets the thing back. Is that a chassaron in their kingship? That means in order for them to be called kings, which the Rambam says they're called kings, they have to have a certain power. You can't walk around when you're the king and say, Ich bin a garnished. You can't say I'm a nothing. You might privately think you're a nothing, but you have to stand up for the kingship. You represent something bigger than yourself. And when you represent something bigger than yourself, sometimes you have to respond. That means if someone hits you, Barabim, it could be you can't be Michael the guy sometimes. Barabim, you can't do it. What are we going to do? It's not based on me. You went after the kingdom. So now I have a clue. Let's say there was no one else worthy. Are they allowed to say, we hope Yehuda takes over? Is the president allowed to say, I hope I'm out of this job soon? Well, that's a contradiction in the heft of being a president of the United States. You can't be a president saying, I hope someone else is president. You're embarrassing the whole people who voted in. The whole nation who voted in. So that's a clarim I have my own. So let's do some recap here because I have much more, but we'll see. Step one, we have Achashverosh was afraid. Gemara answered. He was afraid because it was 3 years later and I got confident.
We're now on a sidebar. We're saying from Yaakov and Eski that the second Beit HaMikdash was not a true rain. It was much less purposely. They used different languages. They might have spoken Aramaic even. They definitely used the month, non-Jewish month. They didn't put the ark up there. He adds they didn't want to stop the monarchy from taking over. They allowed the Hashmonaim. Okay, our question now on the side. How much was Ahasuerus afraid? A question we have unanswered. What's going on here with the Hashmonaim? Ramban says they were guilty for violating this prohibition, punished with death. We're saying maybe the other Terutzim. Either they came from maternally, or when there's no one else around, they didn't do anything wrong. Ramban obviously is clear. Ramban is clear. Ramban says they got punished for violating this thing. There's nothing to discuss there. But there are other things to clear on. We will stop here.